The South African Human Rights Commission has been busying itself for the last, I want to say a little bit over a week, with very emotional testimony from, first it was from victims of terrible atrocities, many of them victims from Phoenix, for example, who have described very difficult targeting from vigilantes who were trying to keep them out of their neighborhoods. One man talking about how he had been attacked on two occasions, innocently walking down the street by vigilantes in Phoenix. We then heard from suspended National Police Commissioner General Kehla Sithole and Gauteng Police Commissioner General Elias Mawela. And we also, of course, heard from National Assembly Speaker and former Minister of Defence, who would have been obviously overseeing the defence team at that particular time, Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula. Mapisa-Nqakula happened to say, for example, there were indications from the police that the police were overwhelmed by what was happening. There was no cooperation whatsoever from the people responsible here. And here she means in KZN. So in other words, localized policing in KZN was not coordinating with the South African National Defence Force. The commission has issued subpoenas for more state officials to appear. Gauteng Premier David Makhura and KwaZulu-Natal Premier Sihle Zikalala are expected to appear today. Yesterday we heard from Christian Glenn Naidu, the founder of KZN VIP Security Services. He recorded a video message that was circulating the call for the barricading of Phoenix, and he insisted it was not meant to be racially motivated as a call to arms, but there were many videos that many of us saw. 9 minutes past seven. Let's hear from Gushwal Brooks, the spokesperson for the South African Human Rights Commission. Gushwal, welcome to Breakfast with Refilwe. How are you this morning?
I'm great, thanks, Refilwe, and good morning to the Cape Talk listeners.
What would you say, if you had to summarize the first few days or this, you know, week and some change of the Human Rights Commission hearings, what would you say is your biggest takeaway?
The important thing is we are able to understand what happened, during that tumultuous period between the 8th and the 19th of July, particularly in KwaZulu-Natal thus far. And I think that it takes us a step closer to understanding what were some of the issues, what were some of the underlying issues. And I think that as a nation, this gives us an opportunity to start looking at addressing some of the issues that clearly started emerging or are emerging as a result of, the unrest and even the lead up to the unrest.
Would you give us a timeline then of what you heard so far?
I think you summed it up, beautifully. Largely we've been focused. The hearing thus far has heard largely about what has happened in Natal, and I think even between the two provinces. We agree that KwaZulu-Natal was where we saw most of the unrest, where we saw a lot of the violence in particular. And what is deeply concerning are obviously these allegations of racially motivated attacks, the barricading and keeping people away from particular areas. And it's not just, it doesn't just boil down to someone's right to freedom of movement, for example, or, just the issue of excluding people on the basis of race. But what we saw was a deep sense of brutality based on the testimonies that we've heard thus far, where people were recounting horrible incidences of how they were attacked and what were some of the things that were done to them during that particular period. But I think also something that we need to understand is that the role of the poverty played in all of this as well, where some people had taken to the streets and actually embarked on these looting events because of the circumstances that they're living under. And I think that the most important thing or takeaway from that is the fact that to a large extent, people have been failed in the delivery of services, socioeconomic rights in particular. And so it becomes a very complex, multifaceted issue that the Commission is trying to address through the lens of human rights officers.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a toothless commission. You have the powers of sanction. And I suppose the powers of instruction, I imagine, perhaps around service delivery, but certainly sanction with respect to the brutality that you describe. Do you have similar powers with respect to sanction against these government officials? I think that's the one leg that we haven't touched on, where the failures of response are seeming to come through.
Nefeba, I think it's important that we understand that the South African Human Rights Commission is a Chapter 9 institution, and I think that the Constitutional Court has been very clear on this particular matter, albeit not directly on behalf of the South African Human Rights Commission. But as a Chapter 9, when we issue directives, when we issue recommendations, those need to be respected. They hold the force of law. And obviously, if there is a disagreement, that the affected party then needs to approach the court and review take it on review, as opposed to what we've seen in the past, where there's a flagrant disregard for this. And the commission, with whatever directives or recommendation it makes, if those are ignored, if those are not adhered to, we will take it to court and we will most certainly enforce it. So yes, indeed, we do have legislative powers that need to be adhered to. And I think it's incumbent on the authorities and anyone else that has a finding made by the South African Human Rights Commission to comply with it, because that is what that is how a constitutional democracy functions. That the various entities draft the constitutional democracy is actually adhered to and listened to.
Gashwal, excuse me, Gashwal. One of the things that has frustrated me since the aftermath of those terrible days was we got not only this. The failure of response, but the failure of coordination in the security cluster amongst those ministers, and this refusal, I suppose, to open up to take the public into their confidence about the failures there. I hope that that is something that you'll be looking into.
Yeah, I mean, and as far as, look, you, me, and everyone else listening to this discussion right now have the right to freedom and security of the person. Which automatically implies that, you know, you have a right to live within a society where you do not feel under persistent threat. Now, I know it's very difficult for us to say that right is fully realized within the South African context. If you think about crime and if you think about the fact that we're in the middle of 16 days of activism and we deal with high levels of gender-based violence, but ordinarily the state has a responsibility to provide us with security that ensures that we have freedom and security of the person. And if there's an absolute failure in then of course they need to be held to account. And the key question that we have to ask ourselves is, how did that failure come about? Was this a failure of intelligence? Was this a failure of what is happening or anticipating what is happening for whatever reason? Or alternatively, do we find ourselves in the awkward position whereby, the allegations in some instances were that there was just a flagrant disregard and people ignored some of the warning signs and ignored and didn't use this as an opportunity to act where they could have acted and actually saved lives as well as businesses, as well as properties, yeah, as well as economic and financial opportunities. So these are some of the very important things.
And then finally, speaking of what you are able to compel, the president made a very bold statement that there are 12 people known to him and the security cluster that have been identified. We've been told that they were responsible for the incitement, a large part of the incitement of violence. And we have been left hanging high and dry for almost 6 months. Are you able to compel the president to tell us who those 12 are and seek justice against them?
Well, I think that we need to look at what the different mandates are. And as I said, our mandate is specifically to promote, protect, and monitor the attainment of human rights within South Africa. And, our compulsion cannot necessarily, we can't just compel the president to give that information if he turns around and says, listen, I have a responsibility to ensure that there is a decent investigation. And that somehow we're going to compromise the investigation if we had to make these names public or these persons public at this particular stage. But what we have to look at is obviously the role that has been played by the various state agents or state functionaries, the state actors, being the police, intelligence, and the role in ensuring that this thing could be stopped.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Gashwal Brooks, spokesperson for the South African Human Rights Commission. The hearings continue today, as I mentioned, with Gauteng Premier and KwaZulu-Natal Premier David Makhura and Sihle Zikalala, respectively. Thank you so much.